This episode is brought to you by Home Team Inspection Service. When you partner with Home Team, you're getting more than a home inspection. You're delivering the home team experience. With a team approach, fast turnarounds, and package options that include home inspection warranties, Home Team helps real estate pros stand out. Plus, many locations now offer pay at close, giving your clients flexibility when they need it most. Schedule your next inspection with confidence at hometeam.com. Hi, friends. Julia Lachey here, your host of the Color of Money podcast. This is a rerun of episode 7. Why? Well, because it was Ryan Butler of the Coalition Group, and he was talking about some really cool things. In this episode, he's talking about owning real estate and how his team, the Coalition Properties Group, has sold over 1,100 homes for over $500 million in volume and their charitable contributions. Also, we're replaying this video because, one, it's on YouTube now, so you actually get to see us. And two, it's also because he's going to be featured in some upcoming video series about role models in the industry. Ryan Butler and the Coalition's Property Group will be featured on that, so we figured we should re-feature him on this. Listen and enjoy.
I think the first thing is you want to start working on not being average anymore. If you're going to be average, you're going to get average results. You don't actually have to be average in this because this real estate thing is not rocket science. So you can actually become really good at this. And it doesn't take like a whole ton of time.
All right, friends, welcome to the Color of Money podcast. We have a very special guest with us here today. Please allow me to introduce to you Mr. Ryan Butler himself. Now, if you are from the Maryland, D.C., Virginia area on the East Coast, and you know exactly who Ryan Butler is, he is part of a trio. The trio we call the Coalition Properties Group. They have been selling real estate. They joined forces and collectively over the last 4 years have sold over 1,100 homes for over $500 million in closed volume. That means they have taken home $13.6 million in commission. And most importantly, Ryan's going to talk to us about their charitable givings and their charitable contributions of over $1 million as well. I am joined, of course, with my wonderful co-host, Mr. Emmerich Peace. Ryan, we are just so excited to have you with us today. Tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about Coalition Properties Group.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it. Excited to be on the pod. A little bit about myself. So I'm just a little country boy out of Mississippi. Made it up to the big city in Washington, D.C. Graduate of Georgetown University. I have an engineering degree background, but I made my way over to real estate. So I've been in real estate some form since 2011 when I bought my first home. And after that, man, I was gung-ho about it. And eventually found my way into the real estate sales business with Keller Williams in 2016. It's my first love. I never been with another broker. So all I know is KW. So since 2016, I've been with Keller Williams and out here just helping families, helping friends, helping the people I love, and really just being an ambassador of real estate.
Now, like I mentioned, one of the special things about you is these other guys that you met and you all formed the Coalition Group. Tell me about these other guys and your team, Coalition Properties Group.
So I have two partners, Harrison Beecher and Keith James. And Harrison and I go as far back as someone my age can go pretty much, but we met in college at 18 and he played football and I played the bench, but we were on the team together. And so that's when our friendship began and we actually started throwing events in college together. So when we were 19, we started throwing events, having parties on campus. That's the first time we made money together. So we've been making money together for a long time. And since then, we kind of brought that same energy, that same vibe to our team, Coalition Properties Group. Harrison came to KW. I asked him, where should I go? He fired me 3 times. He fired me as a client twice. He fired me as a realtor. He wouldn't even let me be on his team. I tried to join his team. He said no, but it's all good, Harrison. I had to plug that little story in right there so we have that on record of what happens. And then I became the rookie of the year for KW Maryland, D.C. in 2017. After that, during that year, I actually met Keith James, my other partner, met him at an event from actually one of our future clients. So I met him at the event, and at the event, we found out a couple things. One, we're both from Mississippi, which is rare that you see. It's our hometown don't leave home much. And In addition to that, we're both part of the greatest fraternity in the world, Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated. And so our friendship, and he became my client. So Keith James, you know, the famous Keith James was Ryan's butler client at one point. I just want to point that out. But then he got his license. I encouraged him to get his license. I said, hey, man, I think you're going to do really well in this business. And so I encouraged him to get a license. He got licensed. And then after that, man, we kind of looked at each other a couple years later and said, man, we should probably do something. It's time to do something together, because we figured that, you know, we could travel much further together than we could by ourselves. We can make a stronger impact. We could have both on our families, both on the community. And so that was the impetus of it all, with our mission statement being to be the bridge to our community for all things real estate, lifestyle, and wealth building. And so that is the basis, the platform that we use that everything else has been built on top of.
All three of y'all were named amongst America's top 1% of Black real estate agents.
That was really exciting. We got named top 1% with two of my partners, Keith being number one and Harrison being number three. And then in addition to that, we were also named number one team in DC per Real Trends this week as well.
Congratulations. Look at that. Brothers collabing. And look what happened. You said you go further together than if you were doing it by yourselves. I love everything about that. Now, we're here today to talk about owning real estate, which we know that you own a lot of. And so we're going to ask you some questions, if you don't mind, helping our listeners understand why and how they too should own some real estate. I'll start first and then I'll let Emra jump in. But I just want to know, first and foremost, why? Why should people own real estate? What are some key advantages of owning real estate?
Well, the first advantage to me, and I've always preached this particular one, it's going to be a little different than what most people think about. It's actually a defensive mechanism. It's a way to protect yourself. Real estate is a protector first and foremost. If you look at the highest expenses that you have when you retire, there's two that come to mind right away, right? One is going to be healthcare, and the other is going to be where you live. And healthcare is not going away. That's going to be expensive. That's not my expertise. But on the real estate side, I do know that after 30 years of paying a mortgage, you're able to no longer have a mortgage or owe anybody any money. So your cost of living from the expense standpoint goes down drastically. So to me, that's first and foremost. And I've just seen it over and over again. I work with a lot of people who are aging out of their homes, and you look at what's important to them. It's like having a place that they don't have to pay a lot of expenses. And then the second thing is, once you get somewhere around 3-4 homes, that can really be a strong supplementation to your retirement when you're older. And that's a lot of money that can come into that that can really take care of you. Even if you made a whole bunch of other mistakes, if you saved no money, you had no 401k, none of that stuff, right? If you had all of that, I'm not saying it will fix all your problems, but man, it will sure make a big dent and can really help take care of you in your older age.
When did you buy your first home?
I was somewhere around like 24, 25. Right around
and what
there.
Motivated you to look into that and then moreover start actually investing in real estate?
Yeah, honestly, when I was a kid, there's two things I wanted to be. One was a laparoscopic surgeon since I was second grade. And the second one was I owned a bunch of real estate. And that's since I was a young kid. I had, obviously, you don't know anything with what that even really means at that age. But I had a teacher who had a son who was a laparoscopic surgeon, one of the most famous ones in the world. And from this podunk little town, Moorhead, Mississippi.
And I'm trying to figure out what second grader even knows what a laparoscopic surgeon is.
Well, funny enough, when they explained it to me, I knew what it was. It's like they made micro holes. And this was like new. Nowadays, everyone does it. But it's like instead of opening up your whole body to go in and get out, say, like gallbladder stones or something like that, they would make like little small insertions. So it wouldn't be, you know, it wouldn't be such a major, and they use cameras and all those types of things. So that was kind of new in the like 2000s. That was the thing. So I said, yeah, I wanted to do that. The second thing was I had a cousin from St. Louis, Missouri. He was flipping 10 homes a month. And I kind of saw that somewhere around, you know, third, fourth, fifth grade in that age. I saw him doing that and I was like, man, that's the two things I want to do right there. I want to do those two things. So the motivation came from that. When I bought the first home, I'm just a person just like everybody else. I use NACA. So Neighborhood Assistance Corporation of America, that's how I bought my first home. What's great about NACA is they force you to do really good habits. So they force you to save money, basically, and then you don't have to use it. So then now you have a house and the money you save. And that was kind of how I got into my first home. And so that money that I saved let me go pretty quickly to the second home, because I now had some money that I didn't use from the first one. And I was renting out the rooms. I went from paying $600 a month to my college teammate for rent to netting almost $2,000 a month for my house after the mortgage by renting out the rooms. And I stayed in the little room and I would rent out all the big ones. But I was like, man, I'm making an extra $2,000 a month. And I finally got a
house hacking before people knew what house hacking was.
No, and I was using Airbnb. So I was using Airbnb to fill it in before that was big too. So I was on the cutting edge of all of this technology and stuff they use these days. And then in addition to that, I mean, I had a nice salary job, you know, coming out working technology. So that was not too bad as well. So now I'm making six figures as a young, you know, punk kid. And I thought I was the man. I thought I was the man. And unfortunately, when you think you are the man and you start making the man decisions. So you start making the man decisions. So after that, I was like, man, let me go get some more houses. So I bought four homes over like the next 18 months. And I got really aggressive with it. I used my money that I was saving for my job. Like I was still living like I was in college. And I got money from friends and family and I started buying homes and flipping it. That was like a 3-year period where I was doing that. And I did really, really well in the beginning. And then I did not. And I lost a whole shirt, as they call it. So I lost a shirt, six figure sum, and I paid everybody back. I lost it, but paid everybody back. Everybody got their money back with the interest. And so that was actually the foundation on which some of my current investments work, because those same people still invested with me because they knew I was going to pay them back no matter what happened.
What are some of the misconceptions about owning real estate? And then just how would you address them?
There's always a conversation around rent versus own. And even with all of that, that people are like, well, you know, maybe renting is better in your place or not. And you might be right. But I think there's three ways you can win in real estate. You can win with the price that you buy it at. So if you buy it at a discount,
right?
You can win on the construction. So if you're able to add value to a home by renovating it and now it's worth more, sweat equity, you also hear that term, right? So you put some sweat equity in. And then I also think you can win by financing. So if you get really favorable financing, I think that's also a win. You know, even if you're buying a home at retail price, which most people do, if you don't have to put that much money into it and you can afford the payments, you're winning because you're able to still keep a lot of money in your pocket. So that's my perspective on that.
What critical factors should somebody consider when evaluating a potential real estate, either investment purchase or owner-occupied purchase?
Owner-occupied is easy. You make sure you can afford the payment. So don't get in here and trying to spend all of your money what they say that you, because we know how the banks let the pre-qualifications go, the pre-approvals go. So you want to make something that makes sense for you. Don't spend half your money and be house poor. I think that's a terrible idea. So make sure that you
have house poor.
Well, that's when you got a big house and everything is great and you can't even afford to put furniture in it. So I don't think that's a good idea for me personally, but some people do it, but I don't think that's the best financial idea to use right there. So it makes more sense to have a manageable and reasonable mortgage payment, because you also have other expenses that's going to come anyway, right? In addition to principal, interest, taxes, and insurance, you're also going to have maintenance costs that comes up, cutting the grass, all types of little things that you have to do to maintain a home. And you don't want to spend all your money and not have any savings at the end.
So for somebody who's listening to you talk about how you got all these properties and you started buying properties and you started financing using neighborhood assistance programs and things like that, what kind of financing advice could you give somebody who might be looking at buying some investment property when they have limited capital?
Well, you want the truth or the truth?
This is a show about the truth. We want the truth and the truth.
We want the real truth and the truth.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. When you're buying a home for the first time, there are all these programs right now, particularly in our area. But like, if you're not, like, why wouldn't you use NACA? Right. If you have limited funds, why would you not use a program like NACA where you don't have to bring any funds to the table? It's basically zero out of pocket, maybe $1,500, something like that. So my first question is, why wouldn't I use that? The second question is, say you get that home and now you're looking to do other investments. My question to you is, how can you increase your income so that it's easier to buy these investments? So either you have to increase your income to buy your investments where you are, or you go check a different location that's more affordable for the prices you're looking at. If you have less savings or money to put towards the deal. So maybe you have to go to, I don't know, Missouri or Tennessee to get your deals. You wouldn't be the first person to do that.
You talked about losing your whole shirt, right?
Yeah.
I lost my shirt, pants, the hat, the shoe, all of that too before. So, we had a conversation on a previous podcast about people who are risk averse, which that resulted in me being risk averse. And Daniel Dixon, our other co-host, he talked about how he don't mind going to Vegas. And I said, I played bingo one time and never played again. Right. Like, so we had a conversation about the mindset of the wealthy and about being risk averse. How do you manage the risk that's associated with owning real estate, such as when the market shifts or property maintenance or tenant related issues? Like, my tenant called me yesterday. She wanted a whole new AC, you know.
Okay.
How do you manage these kind of risks that are associated with owning real estate?
I think wealthy people have an aversion to risk as well. I'm not wealthy by any means, but I think that just from the real estate that I've done or the investments that I've done, I don't like taking big risks either because it's still my money. So I don't want to do that. So I think it's important to note that, but there's a difference between having aversion to risk and taking no risk at all. And in fact, I would even argue it's a bigger risk to not take these calculated risks versus like just sitting and doing nothing with the money, because then the money won't grow. So it's when you don't know who your demons are. And so for me, I understand that inflation is killing every day, is killing my money. And so unless I put it in an investment, my money's not breathing. But when my money is at home, it's like when it's in the bank and it's not getting much, inflation's just killing it, just chopping it away a little piece by piece. And so if you don't have an understanding of economics and how the system works and what the government wants you to do, you'll be at a disadvantage for the decision making you'll have, because you don't realize that you're losing.
I mean, you mentioned that you have a degree in computer science from Georgetown, of all places, and you're a pretty educated guy, right? Do you think that there are certain qualities or skills that are essential to someone being a real estate investor, or that they need to, is a certain type of person, or can anyone do this?
I think anyone can do it, but I also think you have to be a certain type of person. I think it's both. And I would say that it's probably easier to do it when you're a little bit younger, your legs a little bit fresher, and you can go up there and take those calls and everything like that. Put a lot of sweat equity into this stuff. And then when you get...
Home Team Inspection Service is changing the way agents and clients experience home inspections. Their team-based model, streamlined scheduling, and bundled packages, including home inspection warranties, make the process smoother from contract to closing. And with Pay at Close available in many locations, you can give your buyers more peace of mind with less upfront cost. Choose the team that works with yours. Visit HomeTeam.com to learn more.
Older, you just kind of want your money to start working for you without having to do as much, because you want to spend the time that you have. And so what happens is both of those people actually work really well together. And so when you are younger, you have to go get money from the big dogs. I got to call Emmerich and ask for a little something to go get this house. I got to call him and ask for a little something. So, hey, man, let me get a little something. I got a deal. I think this deal can work. Are you interested? And he says, sure, man, as long as you give me my money back plus some. And that's how those types of partnerships really work. And so that can work whether it's, you know, you finding a deal. That can work whether you're just doing group economics and, hey, I got five, you got five, you got five, you got five, you got four people got 20. And you can go up, you know, my area, you can go up to Baltimore or whatever, and you'll get your first home. And then you
let that. So that's a great point. You said you found a deal. So you called Uncle Emmerich, right? Mm-hmm. And, yeah. But how do you know when you found a deal? What are the critical factors that you consider when evaluating whether or not a particular real estate investment is a good investment?
For me personally, everybody kind of has different philosophies. But for me, if you do a down payment and a closing cost and you do all this stuff, and then you get the mortgage and you get the taxes, insurance, property management, and you get all these expenses, right? And you see what this expense is every month. The number one thing for me to even look at it and see if this makes sense is, does my cash flow, does the rent I'm getting cover all my expenses plus some? If my cash flow doesn't cover all of those expenses, I don't even look at those types of deals. That just mathematically doesn't make sense. I don't want to go in a hole every month for a property, and I got a whole bunch of other expenses already. So I don't want to add that on top of what I'm doing already.
So for you, the key component is that it needs to cash flow. Because some people are like, I'm not that worried about cash flow. If the cap rate is the right cap rate and if the numbers make sense. But for you, it needs to actually cash flow.
Yeah, it needs to cash flow for me. And maybe not like right away. Maybe I have to do a little bit of work on the property and increase the value. But the cash flow is just the base solid piece of it. Like I can trust it. I can trust it. The other things you start doing is when you start making calculated risks. Cause I might say, all right, I know the interest rates and I don't know anything, but I believe that the interest rates are going to go down in the next 18 months. So I might take a little bit negative cash flow for a couple months because I got a deal where the equity was good in there. And then I'll refinance the property and now I'll really be cash flowing on this property.
So really what I'm hearing you say is, you can't be risk adverse in this space and you can't have analysis paralysis. You have to really take a look at the numbers and make a decision. Either you're going to pull the trigger and do it or you're going to leave it alone.
That's a part of it, right? And in all of this, just make sure you have a good team. Make sure you have good people around you. If you're in real estate, you know, go to your favorite realtor investor or somebody you trust to put their eyes on this deal you have and get some feedback on it.
You have a good team, what do you mean by that? If I'm just the average person who's listening to this podcast and I'm like, I want to buy some real estate, you're saying have a good team. Where do I find those people?
Yeah, I think if you're an average person, I think the first thing is you want to start working on not being average anymore. If you're going to be average, you're going to get average results. You don't actually have to be average in this because this real estate thing is not rocket science. So you can actually become really good at this. And it doesn't take like a whole ton of time, like years and years and years before you become good. You can become good fast depending on how you build your team. So it's just like anything else. If you were playing basketball, your point guard wasn't that good and you got to get a new point guard. If you don't have a good accountant, if you don't have a good lawyer, if you don't have a good general contractor, if you don't have a good realtor, if you don't have a good banker, like all these people play a role in the deals that you do. And they all need to be good. And you need to be constantly upgrading them to make sure that, you know, as you get better, they need to get better too. If they don't hit the line, if they don't really fit with getting better after a while, you're going to have to find someone that fits where you currently are in your life.
Are there specific lessons or insights that you've gained from real estate investment experiences that you'd like to share with listeners? Because that's a big deal right there.
Yeah, I think for me, the biggest lesson is get someone experienced on your team, even if you got to pay them. Even if you got to pay them some money, they got to get part of the deal. You know, all these realtors and their commissions. It's like, yeah, you cannot do that and and then take on a sucky deal and you don't even know it because no one's there to protect your interest. So you're going to have to pay for it. You can pay for it with time or you can pay for it with money. You get to choose. My point is you got to pay for it. The second piece of that is I believe the best way to win in America with real estate is to take advantage of the financing. And so the fact that you can do 0% down and buy a property with 0% down and then go back again and buy something with 3.5% down and then go back again and buy something with 5% down. I mean, you didn't put a lot of money to just buy three pieces of real estate.
What's a 0% down financing product?
So Neighborhood Assistance Corporation of America. Y'all gonna hear me say that one. No, y'all gonna get tired of me saying that one. Neighborhood Assistance Corporation of America, NACA.com. That's how I bought my first home. That's how many of my clients buy homes. I say that one because I know that's a national program and you can find it anywhere in the country. Now you're going to have different local programs and government grants and loans and that type of thing. That'll be local to your location. Mm-hmm. But this program, NACA.com, is national. So you can use that anywhere, anywhere.
What about like crowdfunding? I know some, don't you guys, don't y'all put your money together and crowdsource some money to buy a property?
I believe in group economics because after you can't do it yourself, you got to go to somebody. That's fundamentally what group economics is to me. And if you can't do it by yourself ever, then you just need to go with somebody. So in essence, we brought our money together and we started buying properties. Now, the bigger the properties, the more friends and family we had to bring in to buy these properties. So when we buy a 100-unit building or, you know, a 68-unit building, that's millions of dollars we have to bring to the table. And yeah, I don't have that. I don't have millions and millions of dollars to just go and out there and buy real estate. So what happens is we call Uncle Emmerich, right? I call Unc, I call my friends, I call my family, and we bring our funds together to buy this real estate. Because what you actually find out is like after a while, there's most people don't own real estate. And then there's a group of people that own one piece of real estate. And then there's a smaller group that owns two pieces and three pieces. At some point, if you have a W-2 job, if you have a demanding business, managing all of this real estate can become pretty difficult. And so at some point, people want to still invest in real estate without having to do all the management. And so that's what we've been syndicating. It's called syndication. We've been syndicating deals together, SEC compliant, and getting monies, essentially fundraising, bringing money together and buying properties together.
So I sent you an email, Ryan, with a property that was like $2 million. And I said, Ryan, if me and my team wants to go in on buying it, what's the first step we should do? And you sent me an email back and said, make sure you ask for rent rolls. And I'm like, bro, that is not the answer I was looking for. I'm saying, like, how do we get started? Well, how do we get started?
If you don't get that, then it's no start. You don't even have to waste your energy.
There you go.
So, I mean, how do we get the money together to buy a $2 million property?
Well, my answer was based on, I know you had the question you wanted to ask me, but I gave you the answer you needed. Yeah, and sometimes that frustrates people because that's not the answer you wanted, but it was the answer you needed. The answer you needed was go see what the rents were to even decide whether you want to start this process. Because you got to start a process of buying this property, you don't know if it's good or not.
Right. So I can't
advise you to do all these other things, and I don't even know if the property is good. So your next step should have been like, sure, Ryan, I'll get the rent rolls and bring them to you, and then you can help me.
I was like, maybe he don't understand my question. Let me rephrase.
Hey, Julia, that's like setting a wedding date before you go on the first date.
Right. That's fair. Yeah. That makes sense.
Now, to your point, what do you have to do? Well, you have to understand how money works. And when you buy a property, who are going to be your money partners? So generally, most people think about the bank first, and I agree. So you need a banking relationship. That's the first one. If you don't have a banking relationship, again, none of this other stuff matters. So you need a banking relationship.
And when you say banking relationship, you're talking more than just where my checking account is at the local Wells Fargo or whatever. What's a banking relationship?
Yeah, a commercial banking relationship. So you need to have a relationship with a commercial lender.
Okay.
And that's a conversation in and of itself because there's so many different types of commercial properties. So that means there's different type of commercial lenders. Different banks focus on certain types. So maybe the bank, like a local bank, yeah, you can use them. But if your loan is above, I don't know, pick a random number, 10 million. They don't really get down with those types of deals. So you have to go to another bank that will do those larger deals. So you have to know what your bank's tolerance is, what their preferences are. They're kind of like almost like people a little bit in that sense. It's like, I won't do that deal, but I'll do this deal. Sure. So you have to find the relationships with the commercial brokers and banks to figure out like what the financing situation is going to be.
Okay, so I'm taking notes here. I got number one, banking relationship. Number two, what's that?
Well, number two is once you have the banking relationship And you have to decide, like, all right, is this money that I'm going to bring to the table myself? Am I buying this deal on my own? Do I have the funds and savings to take this deal down? If I don't, then how am I going to do that? I've broken this down myself personally into basically three types of deals. There's deals you do by yourself. There's deals you do with somewhere between one and kind of four other partners. And then there's deals where you have to use the official syndication model, which is SEC compliant. You have to be SEC compliant documentation. So that's when you hire a lawyer to build out these docs that you can use, that your investors have to sign off on and understand what's going on there.
So how many properties do you own, Ryan?
Number of properties? I think it's 7 or 8 properties. My preference is around apartment buildings. So the number of properties is usually not going to be as many.
Right. So we talk in terms of doors. How many doors do you own?
How about doors? It's somewhere around 250.
Are some of them single family, multifamily? Like, how do you diversify your real estate portfolio?
So I diversify my real estate portfolio. They're all multifamily, actually. And then I'm not against the diversification of real estate, but I'm also really good at multifamily real estate. So I'm going to get the highest return from doing what I do best. So I'm going to spend a lot of time and energy and investments in the multifamily space.
Now, there's a couple of other things I wanted to ask you, going back to where you talked about community, right? And I brought up community because I know a lot of the conversations that you all have is about community. Talk to us a little bit about the community and about that $1 million in charitable donations that you've given.
A big part of our platform baseline is how we give back to the community. And one of the ways we do that, of course, is time. We give back through education in the space that we are best, which is real estate. We also help with facilitation of charitable givings. And so in the last 4 years, we facilitated over $1 million in charitable givings to different organizations. And that's a combination of us, our own funds, our clients, you know, pitching in and really leaning into this. In fact, a lot of times the charitable organizations that we work with, we get them from our clients because we believe in the things our people believe in. If you're something passionate about some type of charity, okay, great. I want to support you. So we're going to support you in that charity, leaning on corporations too and other vendors to bring in and match, do donation matching. So we spent a lot of time kind of building out a little system. And over years, we've been able to do some pretty cool things.
Can you share any upcoming projects or specific goals that you're working on?
We just closed on a property a couple weeks ago. So we just bought a 29-unit apartment building in Baltimore. So if people are interested in what does that look like on investing, investing platform, you can definitely get in touch with me about that. I have a website that you can check out. It's investwithryanbutler.com. Put that in the show notes.
Yeah.
And there you can have you'll get information and see how I run these deals. You'll see some of my past deals. You'll see how deals operate and just get a feel. It's a way for you to start learning about this game, investment games for passive investments.
All right. This is the last question. What's the one thing you want our listeners to leave today with about you and about owning real estate?
I would say that just knowing my personal mission is to be the most impactful person I can be while I'm here on this earth. And what that looks like to me is inspiring people to be the best version of themselves and to go out and do what they need to do and just inspiring them to be greater and then creating opportunities for people. And that means my world has to be big enough for the opportunities for people to come into my world and want to stay. And so that's why we're building out Coalition Properties with the way we are, because we're a partnership people. We partner with people. That's how we look at life. And so we want people to partner with us across the country as we tell you to take this mission that we have and that we really believe in. We know that a lot of other people have the same values and the same mission as well. So we'd love to partner with people across the country who'd be interested in taking these values on Coalition Properties Group of being a bridge to our community for all things real estate, lifestyle, and wealth building.
Well, of course, that's why we had you on this podcast today, because that's what we are striving to do, is be exactly that for our community, to help people learn more so they can earn more. And we believe wealth building does come through real estate and entrepreneurship. Ryan, it has been a pleasure. having you on this podcast. Imrik, anything you'd like to say before we cut out today?
Yeah, there is. There's one big thing. I'm like super inspired by Ryan, Keith, and Beecher. I just am. I'm inspired by them because when you get three young cats that drop their egos and come and form a group together and say, this is what we can do in the collective, I think that's super powerful. And I'm going to give a confession that most people don't know. Just the truth. About a year and a half, about 2 years ago, I was getting ready to call y'all to see how I could join Coalition Properties Group.
I'm just telling you,
I was so inspired. I was like, I like that right there. Them young brothers are on it. And, you know, it's just a great place. It's great for you guys. And that's my public declaration. And I'll tell anybody that because you guys just inspire other people a different way and you don't even know it.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Thank you. Well, you're welcome anytime, brother. We can have that combo ASAP.
All right. Thank you, Ryan. Thanks for joining us. And tune in next week for our next episode of The Color of Money. Bye, y'all.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Have a good one.
Follow The Color of Money podcast today and get notified when new episodes are released weekly.
Be part of this transformative listening experience.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not KWRI and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information.